Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. It's Sunday, December 6th, 2009. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the month of December. We are recording this podcast today, our 15th episode, using our new Mackie mixer, which we'll review on another episode. So hopefully this will all work out well. This is Aaron. I'm here today with Rodney.
Hello, hello.
And since he's a little nasally and got this cold hanging around, he might not be talking as much as usual, but we'll work with what we've got here.
So this podcast will go down to like 12 minutes instead of 30.
Well, probably not.
But technically I would not have this cold if someone didn't go visiting in another state and bringing it back to me.
Yeah, well, that's why we weren't here last week. We had some travel complications. I didn't get back when I thought I would, and I had a demo tape for the previous week, but last week was unaccounted for, so we had to skip.
So now we'll just play a little bit of a catch-up game here with some stories that span the last 2 weeks. Okay, so let's start off with a oldie but a goodie from prior episodes. How are the JAWS and Windows 7 woes going? It's been a couple weeks.
Well, they're woes, all right. I got a call from tech support saying that they were testing a new update and would I like to try it? And I said, sure. And the tech support rep said that it was supposed to fix all the problems I was having. And I said, yay! So I downloaded it, installed it. Things seemed to work fine for a couple days. And then I took my computer to Indiana with me. I used it a couple times, but not really very much. And then this last week I used it, and everything seemed to be fine. And guess what happens? Today, JAWS loses activation. The day of the podcast. Go figure. So I'm limping along with NVDA, and we'll hopefully be able to fix this problem shortly. Apparently it didn't fix everyone's, because I know that some people are still having issues. So it's something that they're working on, and hopefully we'll get fixed soon.
And there's another pre-release update that you might be able to install?
There's another patch that I can install. It did not install correctly when I tried to do it the other day, so I'm going to have to call tech support and see if they can help me do that. And it's especially important since I've lost activation again. I'm not sure if it's going to fix the problem, but it might. But the one that they said would didn't in my case.
And this will be a continuing saga. Hopefully it will not cover many more episodes.
I hope not, because I'm getting bored of talking about it, so I can only imagine people are getting bored of hearing about it. Other Windows 7 problems are starting to occur, such as a black screen of death that people might be seeing on their PCs after Windows updates. A couple of weeks ago, people might have started to see this black screen. Occasionally, it would happen after Windows 7 updated, and also started happening to people after Windows XP and Vista updated. Sites like Prevex, which is a security site out of Great Britain, I believe, blame this on Microsoft and on an update that Microsoft sent out that had something to do with the registry.
Yeah, apparently it was locking down the access control list for the registry keys. Is supposed to pop up an error message if those keys are changed by some other means than Microsoft.
However, this turned out not to be quite the case. Prevex had a tool that might fix the problem, but Microsoft claims that it was not due to that, but it was due to some malware that came out that was widespread and distributed. I'm not really sure what their claim was, other than malware. I'm not sure how they could justify so many people getting this black screen after the update.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that I've had a couple of blue screens and one black screen earlier this week, but I'm not quite sure if that was in relation to a Java update from the runtime environment that I'm running or what. So I'm going to have to keep monitoring that to see what happens.
And now we're going to switch gears and talk a lot about holidays, traveling, and shopping. Since it is now a big traveling and shopping season, we'll talk a lot about things related to, you guessed it, traveling and shopping.
And spending money.
precisely. This first thing, though, isn't too pricey, as long as you're using it on only one suitcase, that is. It is a luggage locator. You can buy it from thingsyouneverknew.com. The website is called Things You Never Knew Existed. And I'm not sure who makes this thing, but essentially what it does is you have a little tag you attach to your luggage, and you put that luggage in the airplane, you know, and it's coming out through baggage claim. And in your pocket or somewhere on you, you have a little remote control, and it is linked to this little tag you've got on your luggage. And so when your luggage gets within 45 feet of you, little lights on the tag on it start to light up. And through your remote, if you have it with you, you will hear a pre-recorded message that you can put in there saying, my luggage is on the luggage rack, or it's in with 45 feet of me, or something like that, whatever. And I guess it will play not only on the remote, but play on the luggage as well somehow in that little tag. They are $14.98 a piece.
I can just see big issues coming on the baggage claim when all of a sudden your baggage starts going, help me, I'm lost.
That'd be funny.
And all the little TSA agents start going, what in the world are we hearing?
Hello, who's lost? What's going on? Yes. And people are starting to buy a lot of different things. And one thing that came out really near the holiday season is not only this little thing, but also the Droid smartphone.
Droid.
Yes. Anyway, Droid not only comes with a lot of different software and applications, but also a screen reading application called TalkBack. And since the Droid software is open source, so is this, so developers can write code for it and further develop it, Google, in its blog about the Droid, gives some details about how it all works. This screen reader works similar to the one on the iPhone and gives user feedback in many appropriate locations like text messaging, browsing the internet, etc. It works in conjunction with a couple other programs called Kickback and Soundback. And Soundback gives audio feedback in applications where you may have the screen reader talking, but you might want some other audio feedback as well. I'm not quite sure what kind, but also maybe it's beeping or some auxiliary kind of feedback. And Kickback gives hip-tac feedback. Isn't that what they call it?
Haptic
feedback. Yeah, I don't even know what it is. So
yeah,
it's when you use the touch screen.
Yeah, it's when you're using a touch screen. Supposedly when someone is using, say, a BlackBerry Storm, I believe, is their touch screen, the actual screen will click and pop wherever you touch. The Apple iPhone gives sort of a feeling like you actually hit a button.
That is weird.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. Haven't experienced that, but supposedly it works fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
Gives people the feel of an actual keyboard when they're using the on-screen.
Wow. Cell phones are progressing further and further than we would have believed, but now they are coming out with cell phones that can be used by deaf people to communicate with one another. There is a group of researchers from Cornell University who have gone to Seattle to test a program with, among, I think they said, 24 deaf customers using cell phones. And this program was based on an earlier program called Mobile ASL, which is American Sign Language. And what it does is it sends in real time using bandwidth. They can see one another signing on the screens of their cell phones. I'm not exactly sure how it's different from video conferencing, although the article says that it somehow is different. I don't really understand how. They've also made attempts to conserve the battery life. It can go into two modes. One mode, when a person is signing and seeing other people sign, in other words, participating in a conversation, and another mode in which the person is just watching people sign and not participating in the conversation. So again, I'm not sure how this is different from video conferencing on a cell phone, but apparently it's a lot clearer and a lot quicker.
Maybe it's sort of a video version of Skype. I mean, Skype, you can use video, but it degrades the video in order to give bandwidth for the phone call itself. Mm-hmm. Maybe the phone quality, as far as hear what you hear, is downgraded since the deaf are not going to actually use that function.
That might be true. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that might be what they're talking about. So cell phones are being, you know, the audience, people who are using cell phones, is going to just broaden that much more. I think it's a fascinating idea. I hope they go somewhere with it.
Well, it kind of fits in there with mobile speak for the blind and using Windows mobile phones. Mm-hmm. Until just a few years ago, that didn't exist. So no. Looks like they're trying to make advances for all disabilities, which is a good thing.
Definitely. I do wonder, though, how they deal with, like, TTY issues. A lot of deaf people, when they need to communicate with those who can hear, they'll use that TTY machines. And if you can use a cell phone to act as a TTY machine when communicating with non-hearing impaired people.
Yeah, it's definitely an area that we do not have much expertise in, since we both have a visual impairment of some sort.
Yes.
But I guess that will open the door for the deaf and other people to be able to do some online shopping with their cell phones.
Online shopping with cell phones is increasing. Approximately 19% of Americans this holiday season, according to a survey, say that they're going to use their cell phones to look for products online. This number is about twice as high with people, 25 and under?
Actually, it's 18 to 29 figured that they will use their cell phones to find store locations and extra bargains.
Yes. And a quarter of those people surveyed said that they probably would buy what they found using their cell phone as well, and not A, go to a store and buy it, or B, buy it over their internet using their PC or computer, that they will just use their cell phone to purchase it.
Well, the article also tossed out a lady that actually goes to the store. She sends pictures of clothing to her kids to find out if they'd like it, mm-hmm. things like that. I never really had thought about using it for that. So that's an interesting use.
Mm-hmm.
And with websites like Twitter, having companies like Overstock.com, Amazon, Zappos, all these other different businesses actually sending out their deals and steals for the holiday season, that may be a good thing for cell phones also when receiving text messages.
Definitely.
I know on Black Friday there were a lot of deals going around on Twitter as far as come to our website, get 15% off this, free shipping, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. You can also find a lot of these deals on internet websites while you're browsing the web. Firefox, for example, has a tool called Invisible Hand. You can go to getinvisiblehand.com. It is an add-on for Firefox, and what it does is it works in the background, and if you are shopping for an item, it will look for the best deal that it can find on that item. It's very discreet, works in the background, and you have a problem, though, because it only works with about 50 different retailers and in 3 different countries. It does cover all the major retailers like Amazon, Buy.com, Overstock.com, Newegg, but it doesn't, it's not like Bing. It has nowhere near the scope that the comparison shopping tool on Bing does.
Bing is really nice because if you go to Bing.com, which is Microsoft's search engine, you go under their shopping link. If you do a search, you can get a list of items that are similar or match your criteria. Then once you select the actual item you're looking for, it will give you a grid of retailers and what perks they give. One in particular is they give you an idea of whether or not that site is offering free shipping or not, which is a big thing, especially if you're ordering like a 15-pound mixer.
Definitely.
But interesting thing with the Bing.com is the fact that they have the cash back program, mm-hmm. which gives you a percentage of your sale back if you purchase it from one of their designated retailers.
Mm-hmm.
I have attempted to use this on our mixer that we purchased, which we got from Overstock.com, because on Black Friday they were offering a, I believe it was 20% off if you ordered it through Bing. Bing was actually offering a 35% off if you ordered from some computer manufacturers. With the cashback program, you accrue funds as far as a rebate, and then you can request a check later on. The only drawback to it is you have to wait, say, 45 to 60 days until the purchase clears, so that they can assure that you haven't returned the product. If anybody's interested in doing that, they can go to bing.com/cashback and read all the details. I would greatly emphasize reading the FAQ on the process and what you have to do. You basically have to jump through a few hoops in order to make sure you get your purchase. So I'll be eagerly waiting for 60 days from now so that I can see if I followed the hoops completely correctly.
Ah, yes. We definitely would want that cash back. Hopefully it'll work out. I don't know, I have not used Bing for this purpose, so I don't know how accessible that grid would be when it was pulled up. Was it just a list of links, or how did it work? Do you remember?
It's kind of like a four-column grid.
Like a table?
Yeah, it's like a table.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll say Overstock.com offering free shipping, yes.
Right.
Percentage off for cashback, 5%, and then actually give you a link to visit it. It's kind of similar to bizrate.com. Mm-hmm. Will do kind of the same thing where you can get ideas on comparison shopping.
Right. I found another site that might do the same thing as Bing. I'll have to test them both out to see which is the most accessible. Empowering Technologies has come up with a site that seems to do something similar. It's called empowereveryone.com, and they have, it is a comparison shopping tool like Bing. It's better than Invisible Hand in that it consists of, you know, thousands of retailers and manufacturers and not just the major ones. Not sure how it actually works. I mean, you know, from what I understand, you just type a product in and it will come up with what stores have that product and what the best deals are in between all of those. I don't think it's any more complicated than that, although I haven't tested it out.
Yeah, it would definitely be interesting to do a comparison between the three different sites and see what types of deals they come up with.
And I will definitely try to do that since it is near the holiday season. It might be something that all of us could benefit from.
Near the holiday season? It's right in the middle.
Oh,
it's only 2 weeks from now.
Oh, my God. I'm starting to freak out, actually, because I don't know what I'm getting my parents for Christmas, and it's 2 weeks from now. Not only is it the holiday season, but it is also the flu season, and there are so many people who are concerned not only with the flu, but also with H1N1, the swine flu. It doesn't necessarily have a season that we know of, but everyone's concerned about it, and we don't know how long it's going to stick around. The CDC has made us aware that there is a malware thing going around, and it's linked to one of a very powerful net bots out there on the internet. And what you will get is an email saying that you need to go to the CDC's website and fill out a vaccination profile to see if you are entitled to the H1N1 vaccine. Well, don't do it, because the CDC requires no such information and collects no such information. Instead, you will be sending your personal information to one of those nasty little net bots out there.
Yeah, that basically just shows that anybody will prey on people's emotions in order to get something.
I know. It's pretty pathetic. But, of course, all malware is pretty pathetic.
I mean, it comes down to the fact that just like with a lot of these email scams and things, like the previous ones we had mentioned with Facebook and Twitter, you know, really people should just go to the actual website that they got the email from. Don't go to the link that's in the email. Actually go to the physical website and see if there's information about it on there, because you never know where a link is going, especially on the internet, and whether it's in emails. clicking email links and clicking on unknown attachments and things like that are the easiest way to get malware, spyware, or to even get hacked.
Right. So, and even clicking on URLs in Twitter posts might not be such a great idea either.
Yes, and actually there was an article that we hadn't scheduled for this, but it was concerning Bitly, and they are actually trying to work to clean up some of the scams going around with Bitly shortener links, which are bit.ly. They're trying to do a little bit of virus scanning and fraud prevention, because a lot of people have been swindled by links, because if you ever think about it, most applications do not show you what's in that link unless you, say, hover over it with a mouse pointer or something like that to show it in the status bar. But nobody ever thinks about that. It's just a quick click and go.
Right.
So they're trying to be a little bit of a on task as far as security to try and prevent some of that, which is a good thing.
That's good. Speaking of Twitter and Facebook, these next couple stories concern them especially. President Obama admitted a couple weeks ago, maybe it was last week, I don't know, we skipped an episode, so I'm not sure when this was, that he does not use Twitter. Oh boy, are some of the tech guys probably really upset at this one.
He does not use Twitter?
No, he does not.
Oh dear.
He was in China, and they were talking about it at an open hall town meeting, I think in Beijing or somewhere, and he admitted that he did not use Twitter, but he believed that China should. The open hall meeting was about social networking and the fact that most of it is closed in China. You can't use a lot of these things like Facebook and Twitter. So in this meeting, he admitted that he had not done that, and that in the past, when posts have been made to his Twitter account, it was a lot of his aides and things who were posting it for him. So, you know, the upshot of it is, it doesn't really surprise me that he has most of, you know, he has a lot of aides who are very tech savvy, and making him aware that that is an audience that they need to tap into and take advantage of, which is good. But we've seen him with his BlackBerry all the time, especially for the past year and a half, and thought, oh, well, he's using Twitter. How wonderful. It turns out he's not.
Yeah, that really makes it quite amusing, seeing as how when he was trying to get elected, it was like a whole year of all of the IT community going, oh, he's using Twitter. You see him on his BlackBerry all the time, when in actuality, he's not even using it. People like Leo Laporte and some CNET folks and other tech journalists, they were just all, he's a tech guy, he's the kind of person that we need in there to tackle net neutrality and things like that, but it's basically an aide using it. And then they had all the big stories about his BlackBerry and that he needed to use it. He wanted to make sure that he could keep his BlackBerry. You know, that was a big story when first got elected. And maybe he's just sending text messages and surfing the internet.
We just don't know.
Maybe he's shopping Bing for Black Friday deals.
Oh, my. Tisk, tisk. Speaking of shopping, Twitter is now entering the shopping arena to some extent. Advertising arena, I should say. You may, in the next few months or so, start receiving tweets that are advertisements for certain products. Twitter is starting deals with entrepreneurs and other large retail companies like Amazon, who will pay people commission if they will advertise a product on Twitter. The theory behind this is that people will send advertisements and they'll reach their personal followers on Twitter. And these people will be more likely to buy from people that they know and respect, in other words, people that they are following, rather than if they just saw this advertisement floating out in the ether on the internet someplace, or saw it on the retailer's website itself. So the idea is, if your friend likes it and advertises it, they must like it, so maybe it is a good thing and you should buy it.
Chris Perillo, who does the LockerGnome.com, it looked like he was doing some of this earlier in the week, where he was posting things about products and things like that. Supposedly, if it is an ad, they're supposed to put the hashtag pound ad, mm-hmm. AD, on their tweet so that people know that, yes, this is an advertisement and I'm attempting to get money from it.
Right.
But I did not see that on any of his tweets. It's probably something that will be looked into.
I don't know. I hope it won't get too cluttered with it. I mean, I kind of understand where they're coming from, but Twitter is the one place that I can look, you know, get tweets and know that I'm not going to get advertisements, too.
Yeah, and it's not clear whether Twitter is backing this kind of ad. Mm-hmm. Twitter has been talking for the last few months about maybe putting in the stream a advertisement for vendors and things like that that might resemble, say, the Google ads,
right,
where you might have 5, 6, 7 tweets in a row, and then all of a sudden there'll be a little box there that has a ad for Zappos or mm-hmm. some other website. Sort of a non-intrusive thing.
Maybe. I don't know. It seems like that would be intrusive in and of itself, though. Because if you're on a website, you can just kind of skip over the ad. If you're in a if you're using another application to view Twitter, it's going to come up as a tweet, and you're going to be looking at it, even if you want to skip it. You see what I'm saying?
That's true. That's true. But there was a story, I believe, last week about a study done that would prove the fact that textual ads were more effective than pictures. That they were saying that that was why Google AdSense seemed to be a valuable profit for website owners and Google, because users would read the text more than they would glance at a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Or text on a picture. If it was just plain text on a white background, it got a better response. So the real question I want to know is, does God read Facebook?
That's a question. You know, we should ask God and see what he says. Someone posted in their status, though, all joking aside, something like this: "Dear God, I ask you for the strength to help me to get rid of all of the demons in my life and to show those who haven't found you the way to your light." Some such thing like that. And it was on their business page for their business. And the question that this poses to me is, would this make you uncomfortable if you were going to this website for business reasons and saw that religious sentiment kind of posted on that person's status line? And to me, it depends on the nature of the business. One woman was writing into this and said that she's a motivational speaker and makes no secret of the fact that in her business and in her life, her religion and her faith is very important to her, and it forms a part of her business and a part of her speaking. So she would not feel uncomfortable if she saw that on someone's website or if she put it on her own, and she would expect that her clients wouldn't feel it as something uncomfortable. So to me, it comes down to what business you're in and the extent to which you keep your personal and professional Facebook identities separate. So that is sometimes a hard line to cross. Now, if you're a minister or something and that's your business, or like her, a motivational speaker, you know, I don't see why it would be a problem to post those kinds of things, especially if your clientele was going to kind of expect that. But if I'm going to, I don't know, let's say I'm going to some website to buy some piece of technology, and it's fairly local, but all of a sudden I see this religious sentiment flash across the screen, I don't know that I'm going to want to go back there for tech supplies. It just makes me a little too uncomfortable.
Yeah, it kind of fits in that same area where people are talking about trying to get jobs, you know, and they're talking about companies going and looking at their Facebook statuses and MySpace pages and Twitter updates to see what kind of things they're into before they actually consider hiring them. It doesn't seem like religion would fit into a lot of different categories.
Again, it comes down to the degree to which it is necessary to keep your personal and professional identities separate. And for each person, that is a different, and it's something that each person has to decide for him or herself.
Well, and it may be something that's new with the technology that we're in, the state of the world we're in right now, and as far as technology, with everybody getting a Facebook page, getting a Twitter page, sending little details about their life out there.
Mm-hmm.
it may just be something that becomes normal, but it's kind of like when you're filling out a job application or doing a resume. Used to be people would say, oh, okay, well, you should put your age, your sex, your religion, all this kind of stuff on your resume. And then 20 years ago, that all of a sudden was removed because of possibility of discrimination. So,
right. So we'll have to see. Maybe the norms will differ. But for now, there seems to be the greater trend seems to be to keep your professional sentiments and your personal religious sentiments separate from one another, in most cases. Further on religion, the Vatican has determined that vampires are not good role models for Catholics. There is a new movie that has come out. It is based on the book Twilight by Stephanie Meyer. And this book talks about a girl moving to a new town and meeting up with some vampires in high school, and that she falls in love with one of them. And it's a whole series of books. I actually read the first book, and to me it was really silly. But it caters, the series itself caters more towards, you know, teenagers. So I, you know, whatever.
Is this the New Moon that's just out?
No, Twilight has just come out. Yeah, I think they're making the New Moon movie now, but Twilight just came out on November 21st or something like that. Well, in any event, the Vatican people have watched it, and somebody at the Vatican level has determined that it is not a movie that Catholics should be seeing, and they should not be using vampires as their role models.
Now, is this a little bit of a jump on the bandwagon as far as popularity of a series or movie or something like that? Didn't they do the same type of thing with the Harry Potter series?
They did, and with a lot of other series. And then they kind of went back on their what they said a little bit after a while. Now, with the Harry Potter series, they didn't like Harry Potter because they thought it would, you know, get children into the occult and going down that road into magic and all of this. But then when the sixth movie came out here just recently, they praised the movie for delineating sharply between the concept of good and evil. So, you know, they kind of pulled back a little bit on their stance in those movies. But for a lot of movies, they, you know, have a pretty rigid stance to it. It just seems funny to me because, yeah, these movies are geared towards extremes in a certain extent. They want to make a sensation at the box office. But it seems like people would know that. They go to movies, they know they're not real. I don't know. Maybe I give people credit for rational thinking when really they don't think rationally. But I just think these little post-its that they throw out about, you know, vampires not being good role models, etc., and trying to dictate our movie preferences just goes a little bit over the top.
Well, I guess it'd be different if it wasn't involving children and the impressionable mind.
I guess.
I don't know. But I don't remember any controversies during the 7 years that Buffy the Vampire Slayer was on television.
That's a good point. I don't remember that either. And I don't know whether they go into television at all or whether they just talk about movies. Because there is a Vatican official who monitors the box office and gives, you know, kind of the Vatican opinion on movies. Obviously, they didn't like The Da Vinci Code when it came out. But when Angels and Demons came out, which is Dan Brown's newest movie, they didn't seem to have a problem with it. So, you know, we're really not sure what their stance is and what kind of criteria they use when they make these determinations either.
Maybe the Buffy series was a little bit more appealing, you know.
Maybe. It was a definitely vampires are bad kind of thing. At least most vampires who didn't have a soul.
Exactly.
So that might be why there was no comment on it. I don't know. Anyway, no comment that we know of.
It probably wasn't as popular as the Twilight series.
No,
I'm going to guess.
However that goes down, we'll see if when the next Twilight movies come out, they change their tune at all.
But what about the dark energy of real vampires?
Yeah, the vampire stars. Not only do we, some of us anyway, toy with the idea of vampires on Earth, but now there are vampires in space, too. Scientists have recently discovered a binary star system out in space someplace using the Very Large Telescope. I think that's its name, actually. The Very Large Electron Telescope or something. At an observatory in Europe. And they found a binary star system that has one of its stars is, I guess, a regular star, kind of like our sun, and the other one is a white dwarf that just went nova. And this white dwarf is just sucking the matter from the other star. The white dwarf has no hydrogen, so I don't know whether the deal is it's trying to get hydrogen and thus is sucking the other star into oblivion, or what the deal is. But it's feeding off of that other star and just increasing in mass, and a lot of that energy from that other star is just sort of disappearing. So as scientists watch this, they don't know whether it's going to go supernova or not, but regardless of whether it does or not, it's going to show them a lot about what dark energy does, and if it goes supernova especially, may help them to bolster their theories of what's going to happen to the universe as it ages. The theory now is that it's going to go into a terminal freeze and just keep expanding and expanding and cooling indefinitely. And they're hoping that if they watch the interaction of these two stars, it may support this hypothesis. Now, I don't know exactly how all that's going to work, but that was their thinking at any rate, I think, from reading this article.
It may give some insight to the Big Bang and how stars are created and all of that.
Yeah, I think that's what they want. Not only insight into the Big Bang, but also into the Big Freeze, as they call the end of the universe.
Sounds chilling. Where's my garlic?
Yeah, I know. Get the garlic. Get some hot chocolate. But that is the theory. Not that we're going to contract again, which some people thought for a while, but that we'll just continue to expand into infinity. Changing notes completely and ending on a cheery holiday note. NORAD has begun to track Santa again. NORAD is the agency between the United States and Canada that helps organize the defense of North America. And every year, starting in early December, and culminating, of course, on Christmas Eve, they track Santa's whereabouts and movements from the North Pole all around the world. And this all started in 1955. There was an agency that was a precursor to NORAD, and a Sears store in Colorado was giving out a number for kids to track Santa. And somebody misprinted the number so that it actually led to one of the command centers for this agency.
Oh, now that's funny.
Oh, yeah. And so the kids were calling up, and they're like, command center, where's Santa Claus? And they're like, oh, my God. So the colonel at the time just ran with it and thought it was hilarious. And so when NORAD was formed a few years later in 1958, they started the tracking Santa thing. So they have a whole, you know, radio commentary and everything. You can go to noradsanta.org and get all kinds of information and updates about what Santa's doing. You can even follow him on Twitter. Currently, as of today, the elves were deeply engaged in making Christmas ornaments that they will hang on various trees as Santa goes by residences. He will go down the chimney and hang these ornaments on people's trees. And to elaborate, lastly, a little bit on the tracking system that they use to track Santa, first they use radar to track his movement, and then the radar is linked to geosatellites that further pinpoint his location as he's going around the world. Next, when he reaches North America, fighter jets will descend at various points to welcome him and, of course, his reindeer. Hopefully he brings Rudolph along. And also around the world, they have Santa cams located in discrete places to take pictures of Santa as he's flying along and stopping to deliver presents. So they've got this all worked out.
But isn't this a little outdated? Shouldn't they just give Santa an iPhone and one of those applications that plots everywhere that he is?
Well, you can follow him on Google Earth. They have a widget that you can track him on Google Earth. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Santa should have an iPhone. If anything, he can listen to podcasts while he's going along in his sleigh.
Or Audible books.
Or Audible books. Definitely. Or Audible books. That about wraps this up, at least on my end, unless you have anything you'd like to talk about.
I believe I am finished. This is our first podcast with our new setup. Hopefully things are sounding a little bit better.
Hopefully it will sound better than our call graph and Skype. And that truly wraps it up this time. I hope you've enjoyed this as much as we've enjoyed putting it together. And we will see you next time.
And now I can go cough.
Thanks for listening.
To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.